Many players do. You may not realize that fear can be the cause of struggling to think clearly, constantly checking past hands for mistakes, or why you lack the energy to play. While you may not experience fear in a big way, it may show up more subtly in one of the following ways. Your mind goes blank in big pots. You feel rushed for no apparent reason. You constantly replay previous hands in your mind. You constantly check results, the cashier, or your stack size. You're playing poker only when you're feeling perfect, so you don't play much. Your mind races and you can't stop thinking. You constantly second-guess decisions. You avoid high-variance plays that you know are the right decision. You take extra time over a tough decision, but are still not thinking anything except, what the hell do I do? You feel overwhelmed about learning the game. You regularly lose your train of thought in a hand. You're reluctant to move up in stakes. You struggle sleeping after bad sessions. The nature of fear. Fear is an accumulation of anxiety. Anxiety is an accumulation of doubt or uncertainty. Uncertainty is essentially a question you don't have the answer for, or don't have enough experience to prove the answer you already have is correct. When these questions are unanswered or unproven, doubt lingers and eventually accumulates into anxiety. If this goes on long enough, it turns into fear. As with other emotions, fear exists along a spectrum. Only it begins with a question. By digging into your fear, you can pull out the questions that are unanswered or unproven. Uncovering the questions underlying your fear is important because they indicate what you want to know at a deeper level. The following are examples of common questions poker players have. If I can't beat the fish, how can I ever be successful? What will I do if online poker goes away or the games dry up? Is this the right decision here? How could I have been so stupid? When is the bad run going to end? Why does this always happen to me? Why can't I ever play well when I move up in stakes? Will I ever be able to reach my potential? Will I ever make it as a pro? What will I do if I can't make it as a pro? Can I handle another sickening downswing? Will I wake up one day not being able to win at poker? Sometimes these questions linger in a player's mind without being answered, while at other times, they're answered automatically with responses such as, "It's because I'm stupid that I make these mistakes. I'll never be successful if I can't beat the fish. The bad run is never going to end." Or, "It's because I'm just not a good enough player to ever make it as a pro." These answers perpetuate fear. It may seem overly simplistic to reduce fear down to a question, but think about it logically. When you have certainty, there's nothing to fear. This is why people who have certainty display confidence, even when they're wrong. If you were 100% sure that online poker was going to be legalized and would lead to a second poker boom, it would be illogical to worry about it going away. If you were 100% sure that your bad run was going to end in 10,000 hands, you wouldn't think twice about sitting down to play those 10,000 hands as quickly as possible. As simple as it sounds, certainty is the antidote to fear. Unpredictability or uncertainty alone does not create anxiety, just as anger alone does not create tilt. To reach that level of intensity requires underlying flaws in how you're approaching and learning poker. The end goal is not to eliminate uncertainty. It's to correct the underlying flaws in your logic that force you to need certainty where you really can't have it yet. Without uncertainty, there is no risk. Without risk, there is nothing to gain in poker, no edge to create, and no profit to be made. Barry's take.
Be fearless, like Ivy. Players often have a desire to be fearless, just like how they perceive Phil Ivy, an entity devoid of all fear with the ability to invoke fear in others. Trying to be fearless like Ivy without actually removing the very real fears you have is a results-orientated way of thinking about the mental game. You see the sum of his mental game parts, but not how he got there. It's no different than wanting to have as much money or to be as good a player. You see the end result and think it can't be yours without actually earning it. Unfortunately, the mind is powerful enough to convince you that it's possible, but not powerful enough to instantly make it a reality.
Incomplete information. You no doubt have heard poker referred to as a game of incomplete information. The skill in poker comes from creating certainty where there were previously unknowns. You have no idea what hold cards your opponents have been dealt, but you have the ability to put them on ranges, retrace previous hands with them, and pick up on their tells to fill in that missing information. You don't know the strength of your opponent after playing one hand with them, but if you regularly watch training videos, post on forums, and work on your game, you can learn how to quickly assess their game. Hypothetically, let's say there are 10 technical unknowns in any given poker hand. A fish can only fill in one or two of the unknown variables in a hand, whereas a professional player can fill in 7. A professional's edge comes from their ability to create certainty where weaker players can't. In other words, they have an informational advantage. A player is a mental game fish when they lack the proficiency to fill in enough of the unknown variables. Hypothetically, let's also say that there are 10 technical unknown variables within a mental game issue. Players with anxiety or fear problems typically have the skill to fill in 1 or 2, but believe they have the skill to fill in 7. since they believe that they should be able to figure it out. They scour their minds for the answer. When there is no answer to be found, their thinking moves faster and eventually races to desperately fill in the unknown variables. They constantly check the cashier but don't know why. Their mind goes blank when playing 5-10, but they can't figure out why it doesn't happen at lower stakes. Or they rush decisions in big pots but can't figure out how to slow down. Trying to fill in more unknowns than your mental game skill allows is just like trying to outlevel a superior player. Your mind outthinks itself, and your results are even worse than if you stuck to what you know. Fortunately, a player fills the unknown variables in the mental game by developing skill in the same way as in the game itself. Only the details differ. Fuel to perform. If you aren't feeling pressure on the first tee of a major golf tournament, you aren't alive. Overheard on the PGA Tour. While fear causes a host of problems, when experienced at low levels, it can be a major source of fuel to perform at your highest level and get into the zone. In pressure situations, it's common to feel anxious, nervous, excited, amped, or jacked up. However you describe it, having emotion and adrenaline pumping through your body primes your senses to pick up on details you can't see normally. It's because you're picking up on those details that it feels as if the action just flows through you, time seems to slow down, and you just know what your opponent is holding. You're in the zone thanks to your nerves. In poker, as in sports, business, and other performance arenas, the ability to thrive under pressure previously gave people a distinct competitive advantage. It's one that kept them from being naturally selected out of the game until psychology and sports psychology gave people who struggled to perform under pressure a formal way to learn this previously unattainable skill. These people may have been equally, if not more, talented, but without the ability to perform under pressure, they couldn't achieve a level of success equal to their talents. For poker players who lack the ability to perform under pressure, this chapter intends to level the playing field. When addressing issues of fear, the goal is to identify and break down the underlying flaws in your mental game that turn your questions into fear. One example of such a flaw is the belief that feeling anxious or fearful means you'll perform poorly. When you experience normal nerves at the table, your mind couldn't answer the questions, "Why do I feel this way?" and "What does feeling this way mean for my performance?" Your inability to answer these questions created more anxiety, which shut down your mind and made it more likely for you to fail. Over time, you associated anxiety with failing, so you learned that anxiety was inherently bad. Since you learned how to fear your nerves, you can also learn how to use them to play your best poker. Here are a couple other benefits that fear or pressure provides. 1. Just like tilt, anxiety exposes underlying weaknesses in how you technically play poker and approach the mental game. Basically, it helps you identify what you need to improve. 2. Pressure is critical for learning. When your nerves are amped up to the top of the performance curve, you become a learning machine that's capable of picking up on subtle details in the action you normally can't see. By embracing anxiety, you're in a great position to capitalize on it. Fear profile. Before addressing your fears directly, first you need to recognize and understand them better. The best way is to identify your patterns of doubt, anxiety, and fear. Here are a few questions to get you started. What are the situations that typically provoke doubt, anxiety, or fear? What are your earliest signs of fear? Do you struggle with any of the things listed at the beginning of this chapter? Do you have any of the questions listed at the beginning of this chapter? Can you describe them in more detail? Can you identify the point when anxiety goes from helping you perform to being excessive and causing problems? How do you experience anxiety? Heart pounding, sweating, nausea, dry mouth, foot or hand tapping, etc.? When analyzing your pattern, think about the presence of these 5 common symptoms of fear. Poker players often view these as being inherently negative and bad for their game. They're not. They are associated with the underlying flaw or flaws causing your fear. When you understand them, you're a step closer to removing them and solving your problems with anxiety and fear. 1. Overthinking. Fear causes your mind to race, to go around in circles, and to obsess over one thing. This happens because your mind can't find the answer to your underlying question. The antidote to fear is certainty. So the mind does everything it can to find an answer. When really desperate to find an answer, the mind continues until it's exhausted or gets distracted. Since the mind is limited to a finite number of things it can think about at any one time, write down your thoughts. Writing down what you're worried about makes it easier to figure out the underlying question you're trying to answer. Once you've identified the question, write out the answer. Overthinking creates confusion and clutter in your mind. A cluttered mind is like a cluttered desk. It's difficult to find what you're looking for. Writing helps you clear out the clutter and use your mind more efficiently to find answers. 2. Not trusting your gut. You know the right play, but go against it. Why? It's because you don't trust the answer your gut spits out. This leads us to ask, what the hell is the gut? If you don't know what the gut is, it makes sense why you wouldn't trust it. Essentially, the gut is skills at the level of unconscious competence reacting to the situation with an answer. It's the mental version of an athletic reaction in sports. One example of this is when a basketball player driving to the basket instantly adjusts the placement of the ball in his hand to avoid a defender's attempt to cut him off. There's no thinking in this athletic move. It's a purely instinctive reaction. The same is true on a mental level. The gut doesn't think to come up with the answer. The answer comes automatically. Barry's take.
Feel players. You often hear about feel players. These are players who seem to have some mystifying soul-reading ability, but in reality, they're just using their skills trained to the level of unconscious competence really well.
Mental reactions, just like athletic ones, happen thanks to deeply ingrained skill. If you don't trust your gut, you don't trust all the work you put into learning the game. When your gut is right, you learn it's something you can trust and use as part of your decision-making. However, sometimes your training is old or flawed, so your gut is wrong. When that happens, it means you found a weakness in your knowledge base to correct. Once you correct that weakness, your game becomes even more solid because your gut is more accurate. 3. Second guessing. While you're playing, the urge to know the correct decision in hands where you've lost or made a mistake can be so strong that you replay them repeatedly in your mind or review the actual hand history. You've made a move, lost a hand, and now you question it. You wonder if it was wrong. There are so many times when the decision is close, and not knowing if it was right or wrong can be agonizing. Second guessing means you have doubts or questions about a decision after you make it. Often this is fueled by a desire to make sure you don't lose more or make more mistakes. However, being distracted by previous hands makes both more likely to happen. The best thing to do is to take a quick note and then revisit the hand after you're done playing. 4. Performance anxiety. Playing poker is a test to prove what you know. Players with performance anxiety put so much pressure on themselves to make the correct decision that they end up overthinking, not trusting their gut, and second-guessing their decisions. Unfortunately, these actions make them play worse and make it harder for them to access all of their poker knowledge. Test your game when you play poker instead of overthinking, not trusting your gut, or second-guessing your decisions. Then you can more accurately evaluate the strengths and weaknesses in your game so you know specifically what needs to improve. This way, you're better prepared to take the next test. 5. Negative future. Additional fear is created by anticipating the fear you will have about things that could happen in the future. This fear of fear causes players to make mistakes, delay starting a session, avoid high-variance plays, and play less poker overall. What creates this additional fear is the belief that what is predicted to happen in the future will happen. They don't just think they're going to play badly and lose. They know it. Poker players make shitty psychics. They can't predict the future. What they imagine happening in the future is a prediction, not what will actually happen. Believing the prediction will become reality adds more fear, which prevents a player from thinking clearly. Consequently, losing, making mistakes, and a bad run become more likely, and what was previously feared becomes a reality. Preparation, injecting logic while playing, and the writing exercises described in the next section all make it less likely that your predicted negative future will become a reality. General strategy for resolving fear. Begin resolving your fear by writing down the thoughts and underlying questions surrounding it. Externalizing what's on your mind allows you to look at the details of your fear more objectively. Plus, writing is one of the quickest ways to make rapid progress. It clears your mind so it's easier to think through decisions while you're playing. Here are 2 writing exercises that you can use to make efficient progress towards resolving your fear. For more details about why writing is effective, see Chapter 4. Playing out the fear. What's the worst that could happen? This is a common question asked by people trying to help someone get over their fear. This strategy takes the essence of that question a step farther. Start by taking the thing you're fearful of and writing down an answer to the question, what's the worst that can happen? Then ask follow-up questions such as, why is that bad? What would happen? What would you do? How would you feel? What's the solution? Answering these questions helps you better understand what's causing your fear. Then, directly address your fear by breaking down the underlying flaw, finding something productive to do, and thinking better overall. Here's an example of how you can play out the fear of moving up in stakes in writing. What's the worst thing that would happen if you moved up in stakes and had a downswing? I would lose money and confidence. What would that do to you? I would have to drop back down and build my way back up. How would that feel? It would suck, of course. I've been grinding for a while and I just can't seem to break through. I can't seem to figure it out. Have you done everything you can to figure it out? I've done a lot. Maybe there's more. I don't know. I'm just not sure what I could do. How can you find out? I could ask around. I have a few poker friends who could probably help. I posted on forums a few times. I could do that. Maybe hire a coach. Why does it suck to go back to the grind at lower stakes? I just want things to be easier and not have to go through these constant up and downs. It's so damn frustrating. I just freak out whenever I play higher. What do you freak out about? I don't know. I guess because I've failed so many times, my brain locks up and I play like a donkey. I just want to make it so badly. How can you make it more likely that you'll succeed? Probably by putting in more work. I tend to blow it off when things aren't going well, and I really just need to be more consistent with it. It may not be fun, but it's the only way. There's more to this problem, but at this point you've figured out a productive step to take. Do more work, especially when you don't want to. This solution alone isn't going to eliminate the uncertainty or even all the fear of moving up, but it's a step in the right direction. Part of what's causing the fear in this example is a desire for success at higher stakes to come easily and some uncertainty about how to improve. This technique helps you to dig through the layers of fear to find the cause of fear and a way to resolve it. Too often, players play into their fear and avoid moving up. The overall goal is to break through the fear so it no longer holds you back. Answering questions. When questions go unanswered, they stew in the back of your mind and subtly undermine your efforts to play solid poker. The longer they go unanswered, the more havoc they create. The first step in this strategy is to state the uncertainty you have in your game in the form of a question. For example, what if I'm not good enough? What if I can't make it? If I can't beat this guy, how can I ever beat regulars at the next limit? The second step is to reword questions about the future that can't be answered yet. Here are a couple good examples. When is the bad run going to end? Since you can't know that, the better question is, what do I need to do to improve how I handle running bad? Can I make it as a pro? The better question is, what do I need to do to give myself the best chance to make it as a pro? The third step is to answer each question. Too often, players ignore their questions and think they're stupid or illogical when really they're legitimate and reasonable questions to ask. By answering them, you develop the certainty needed to resolve your fear. You can't eliminate uncertainty in poker, but you can eliminate fear. Answering the legitimate questions in your game helps you to accomplish this. For both writing exercises, if the answers don't come immediately, it's better to be accurate and go slower rather than force it and get the wrong answer. Common fears. What follows is an analysis of the common fears poker players face. For any fears not mentioned, use the general strategies provided previously in this chapter and in chapter 4 to analyze and resolve that fear. Fear of failure. The formula for success? It's quite simple, really. Double your rate of failure. You're thinking of failure as the enemy of success, but it isn't at all. Thomas J. Watson, first president of IBM. Failure means different things to each player. For some players, failure means simply failing to reach a goal. For others, failure defines them. The fear of failure is not necessarily a bad thing. It forces some players to work hard and to do everything they can to succeed. However, for other players, it can be too disastrous to their game. The nature of competition requires that someone has to fail, and fearing it might be you is the most common fear in poker. The pressure to succeed makes solid players overthink decisions, only play when they feel perfect, and obsess over previously lost hands. This only makes failing more likely. Common advice about the fear of failure, both within poker and outside of it, makes the solution seem simpler than it is for most players. The fear of failure is often caused by underlying flaws that are not well known. Resolution can only happen when all the flaws causing this fear are fixed. Here are a list of the typical underlying flaws that cause the fear of failure. Players typically have more than one. High expectations. Players often have ideas in their mind about how much they should be winning, how big their win rate should be, or what stakes they should be playing. These ideas are far-reaching goals, and they're often the basis for high expectations. When these expectations are not met, players are unable to understand why they failed. This results in fear and anxiety. The solution to this problem is to turn expectations into goals. Since a goal is something that a player strives for, they know there are necessary steps that need to be taken and work that needs to be done in order to reach it. An expectation is merely supposed to happen, so little or no work is done. Therefore, when expectations are regularly not met, the player begins to fear failure, but takes little to no action to discover or fix the cause of their failure. On the other hand, when a goal is not met, the player takes what was learned in their previous attempt, adjusts their strategy, and continues the work to achieve it. Players with high expectations fear failure because they haven't learned how to use failure to help them succeed. Choking in big spots. If you choke in big spots but don't know why, fear can develop. Not knowing why you choked leaves you unable to prevent it and unable to predict when it will happen next. That uncertainty makes you protective against failing, which further paralyzes your mind and means you're more likely to choke again. Choking over a big decision happens when accumulated fear rapidly overwhelms the brain and shuts off all ability to think. To stop choking and to reduce your accumulated fear, identify the underlying cause of your fear and follow the steps in Chapter 4. trying to control what you can't. When you take poker more seriously, there's more on the line. Time, money, and freedom, for example. When there's more at stake, the consequences for failing are greater, so you try to do everything you can to win. When that includes trying to control aspects of the game that can't be controlled, you set yourself up for failure. Spending time and energy trying to control variance or other players, even if subtly, means you're less focused on making sure that you're playing well. Be certain you are focused on controlling what can actually be controlled and on better understanding the factors that you can't. Failing to see success. When smaller goals that you've accomplished in the past go unrecognized, it appears that you are failing at a higher rate. You're not. Your perspective is one-sided because you've failed to recognize previous success. To correct this problem, search your poker history for the goals that you have set, small and large, and recognize the ones you have achieved. Do this steadily over a couple weeks, as it's unlikely that you'll remember all of them at once. Just writing down these accomplishments is sometimes enough to begin resolving your fears. This cause of fear is similar to the concept presented in Injustice Tilt, trying to win every session. Often, cash game players believe that it's possible to win every session. In their mind, losing one session means they failed. Wishing it were possible to win every session sets an expectation that's beyond reach, so everything short of it becomes failure. To solve this cause of fear, prove to yourself why this wish is unattainable and why you don't want this wish to come true, and set realistic goals rather than unreasonable expectations. Thinking success should be easy. When success comes easily for a long time, players often struggle the first time they experience a big setback, such as a terrible bad run. Over time, they've come to expect success, and a setback destroys that expectation. Having never faced such a challenge, they lack the skill to handle a normal setback, and fear develops as they wonder if they'll ever succeed again. With the competition in poker getting strong, setbacks are going to happen. Learning how to get back to work during and after a setback is a skill. If you lack it, develop it. Success now requires hard work, especially when faced with adversity. Thinking you're a failure. If failing in poker makes you feel like a failure, there's more on the line than just money. Often players show this type of fear by not trying hard, not putting the hours in, or not working enough on their game. If they did and still failed, it would be too much for their confidence to handle. An underlying confidence problem is the cause of this fear. Once confidence is restored, their fears disappear. Refer to Chapter 8. Injecting logic. Without some failure, you can't learn what's needed to achieve greater success. Real failure only happens when you give up. The fear of failure is a complex problem, especially because there's potential for you to fail while trying to get rid of it. Be sure to stay aggressive in correcting the underlying cause or causes of your fear of failing. Even the fear of failing to correct your fear. Expect setbacks to happen. They're a normal part of the learning process. Setbacks are not failure. Take them in stride and keep working. Lastly, since the fear of failure can be connected to motivation, tilt, and confidence, consider reviewing those chapters as well. Fear of success. Although less common than the fear of failure, the fear of success can be equally as detrimental. It's often difficult for players to identify because it sounds odd to fear the very thing they are trying to achieve. So why would someone fear success? Handling the attention that comes with success can be very tough, especially for players who aren't naturally outgoing and social. The spotlight can make players become arrogant, egotistical, and full of themselves. They fear becoming this way. They fear other players saying they don't deserve their success and are really just a fraud who ran good. They undervalue their own ability and feel undeserving of their success. Underlying the fear of success is a confidence issue. Players with stable confidence are able to succeed without having success completely change them or their approach to poker. Chapter 8 offers advice on how to develop stable confidence. Also be sure to have clear recognition of your pattern of fear. Then, when signs of fear show up, such as playing poorly, lacking focus, or not playing at all, you're ready to inject logic and break through your fear. Fear of mistakes. The fear of mistakes is caused by errors in how you view the learning process. Mistakes are an important part of this process, so fearing mistakes suggests that you also fear learning. The fear of mistakes is subtle, so the signs can be harder to spot. Here are a few things to keep an eye out for. Rushing a tough decision to get the hand over quickly and end the agony of uncertainty. Quitting after the first mistake, or perceived mistake, no matter how big or small. Treating all mistakes equally. Anything less than perfection is not acceptable. Hesitating, overthinking, and second-guessing many of your decisions. There are a few main reasons to fear mistakes. First, when you study and work a lot on your game, it can lead you to believe that you won't make a mistake twice, especially an obvious one. Consequently, when you make a mistake twice, it's shocking. You weren't expecting it. When the disbelief wears off, it's soon replaced by questions that swirl around in your mind about the state of your game. How can this happen? How can I be so stupid? What more can I possibly do? You do more work to try and play better, but you still make the same mistake. Your game feels out of control, and fear multiplies. You also fear mistakes when you believe mistakes should never happen. This belief increases the pressure to play perfectly, creates performance anxiety, and ultimately leads to more mistakes. You try preventing mistakes by learning everything you can and working as hard as possible. However, this excess of knowledge makes it harder to decide which bit of strategy to use when under even slight pressure, and ultimately leads to mistakes. The underlying flaws that create the fear of mistakes also create mistake tilt. Some players get angry, while others develop fear. See the section on mistake tilt to learn more about these underlying flaws. The fear of mistakes is also connected with the fear of failure, so you may find your answers there as well. Injecting logic. Mistakes are opportunities to improve. Focus on playing well now and learn from them later. Fear of a bad run. Fearing a bad run most often happens to players who've experienced many bad runs. However, with so much talk about bad runs, new players can develop the fear before even having one. Bad runs can severely hurt your bankroll, decrease your confidence, and stifle your motivation, as well as cause tilt. Each time you have a bad run, all that negative emotion piles up and stays with you. You don't forget what it's like to experience it. When you finally get on a good run, you can't even enjoy it because you know it's just a matter of time before the cards inevitably turn against you. While a bad run does cause your bankroll to take a hit, the main reason players develop this type of fear has more to do with the experience of running bad. Sure, it sucks to lose money, but you know it's a long-term game. The tough part is being able to get through it mentally. Running bad can drive you crazy. It's reasonable to fear all the negative things that come with it. Experience the craziness of running bad enough times, and you can develop beaten dog syndrome. Each time you run bad, you become more timid because of the thrashing that variance inflicts on you. The long-term solution here is to address the specific issues, tilt, confidence, motivation, or other fears that make handling a bad run so difficult. Only when a bad run becomes less chaotic does the fear of having one get resolved. After making improvements in those areas, by injecting logic, you can then begin pushing through your fear as it shows up. The next time you run bad, look at it as a challenge to prove just how much better you can handle it. This approach often goes a long way in taking the fear out of something all poker players go through. Only when you know a bad run isn't going to feel like a beating does it make sense to break through the fear of a bad run. If you haven't made improvements in how you handle running bad, do not take this step yet. Client story. Pascal, Steak Monster Tremblay. 10-20, heads up, no limit. Card Runners coach.
I contacted Jared when I was having some of my best months ever in terms of results, but I still had a lot of anxiety and stress related to my game. I played professionally full-time, and the stress level, even when I was winning, was a big issue, and in the long run was hurting me a lot. I was stressed before I played, while I played, and even afterwards. It was a constant pressure that was just there all day. What I came to learn was that I was consistently dreading negative variance, especially when it would last for weeks. I was constantly anxious because I never knew when I was going to lose. The possibility for a really bad day or week was always there, whether I was winning or losing. I knew the stress was costing me. If I lost a bunch of money one day, the next day I would be scared it would happen again. If I was up a good amount, I would quit too early because I wanted to book a win, prevent a downswing, and gain some confidence. It cost me money not only when I was losing, because I would quickly fall into my C game, but also when I was winning, because I was too focused on short-term results. I wasn't thinking about how well I played. I was just thinking about the immediate financial benefits or drawbacks. It took a while to grasp some of the things Jared was telling me because the issues I was having were so deeply rooted. Things didn't instantly change overnight. It was a gradual improvement with many light bulb moments in between sessions. His approach worked really well for me because he didn't just put a patch on the problem or tell me a quick fix. Instead, he changed the way I think about things, not just poker, but life in general. It wasn't just what he was saying, but also the fact that I was doing work outside of our sessions, which is something I didn't even think of doing before. I had spent a lot of time reviewing hand histories and training videos, but never spent any time on myself. I never thought about it like that. It's an aspect of a poker player's game that is very often ignored and never really focused on. How can that be when our emotional state plays such a big factor at the tables? A big thing he had me do was write, so I started a blog, and surprisingly, it really helped a lot. I used it to voice my emotions towards the game, and it got me understanding them better. If you don't understand them, you won't be able to fix them, he would tell me. The more we talked, the more I understood, and the more I realized that I wasn't destined to feel this way. So rather than just getting pissed and thinking, that's just the way I am, I started thinking more about the emotional state I was in and how to change it. Ultimately, Jared helped me identify what was really creating this fear. When I was 18, I had a really bad bout of depression. It was something I never thought would have anything to do with how I feel now, 10 years later, especially in poker. Jared helped me to get to the core of that and realize that the reason I was worried about downswings was partly because I didn't want to go back to feeling like I did when I was depressed. I didn't know that at all, obviously. He helped me realize that I had just put a patch on it and that the underlying cause wasn't resolved. Now, I'm more constructive and positive in general, and I don't get the sense that I need to be completely fixed. Those emotions are still there. Jared didn't make them disappear like some magician, but he made the bottom of my range a lot stronger than before. I still get upset about downswings or losing several big pots in a row, but I deal with them a lot better. They are less intense, more controlled, and my C game is a lot better, even during a downswing. I think those emotions will always be there, but I'm confident I can handle them much better now.
Injecting logic.
Striving for permanent perfection is an exercise in constant frustration and disappointment.
Fear of moving up in stakes. Breaking through to a new limit is easier when avoiding a common results-oriented view of moving up. Players with a fear of moving up rarely say that their goal is to establish themselves at the next limit. Instead, they just want to get to that limit and view the process as do or die. They want the end result, but since a crushing defeat is a possible outcome, there's a ton of pressure riding on every decision. To take some of the pressure off, they'll only play when the games are most profitable. A good idea, but one that feeds into the belief that moving up is all about bankroll rather than the skill needed to be successful over the long term at that limit. The fear of moving up can often be eliminated by using a strategy that focuses more on developing skill. Rather than taking shots and hoping that you win, look at the first few times you play higher as a reconnaissance mission to gather intelligence on 1. The strengths and weaknesses of the players, 2. The weaknesses in your game that are not exposed at your current limit, both in your poker and mental game. After gathering this information, you can work on the weaknesses you find at your current limit without pressure or severe consequences. Then move back and forth between limits as a way to test or work on your game. The goal is that each time you bounce back up to the higher limit, your game will be stronger. Eventually, it will be strong enough for you to stay, and then you can begin working on establishing yourself as a solid regular. Since the fear of moving up in stakes is also closely associated with the fear of failure, review that section. Lastly, it's a good idea to decide how much of your bankroll to invest in this strategy, so you limit losses while gathering data. Risk aversion. In a game of variance and risk, it's not surprising that risk aversion is a common fear. Essentially, by choosing not to play in bigger games, bluffing or shoving in profitable spots, or challenging yourself against tough regulars, you are protecting your game from risk. Why? What are you concerned about? A bad run? Losing money? Losing confidence? In being risk-averse, players often unknowingly protect their game from bigger issues such as low confidence, tilt, or other fears. It's risky for them to play higher variance plays or play in bigger games because losing would trigger these mental game problems. When those bigger issues begin resolving, risk aversion also starts going away. In order to completely resolve risk aversion, it's important to push yourself to take more profitable risks at the table. At first, that might take a leap of faith, so consider setting a specific amount of money to invest in pushing yourself to take more risks. Often, just knowing that your potential losses are limited helps to free you from the aversion to risk. Client story. Barry Carter. Mid-stakes sit-and-goes and cash games. Poker journalist.
I had a crippling risk aversion that developed after a really bad downswing. It was destroying my game. Whenever I had top pair, I would fear two pair. Whenever I had a set, I would fear an overset. Whenever I flopped the nuts, I feared I would get outdrawn. It was making me either play passively with monsters or overbet them to avoid a cooler. They always have it, I would continually say to myself. Even though, session after session, it was the single most damaging issue I had, it was also the easiest to solve. I actually think just doing Jared's questionnaire cured 90% of it. Risk aversion was something I'd kept in my head, so to finally let it all out on paper as I answered his questions improved the issue by leaps and bounds. Jared helped things along by pointing out to me that I was taking an even bigger risk by doing nothing. By playing my hands passively, I was losing a ton of value. I also realized that by not playing more aggressively, I never got my opponents to fold, and was always relying on showdown value. I was actually encouraging my opponents to outdraw me. I can't say that just doing the questionnaire has made me the player I am today, because I am fortunate enough to have worked intensively with Jared on all my mental game issues. The one thing I will say is if you have played with me in the last 18 months, you would never think I had a risk aversion issue. If anything, you would probably think I needed to work on taking my foot off the gas a little.
Chapter 7. Motivation. Chances are you've come to this chapter looking for a way not to be lazy. In the past, you've tried listening to music, watching iconic sports moments and dramatic movie clips, reading books and quotes, and making big prop bets, all in the hopes of getting motivated to play. It's as if laziness is some sort of prison, and with the right spark of inspiration, you can slip past the guard and escape forever. But no matter how hard you try, laziness always catches up with you. While you may have tried all manner of elaborate schemes to fool yourself into being motivated, have you ever confronted why you lack motivation in the first place? It's actually a simpler problem to solve than you realize. For starters, some of you think you have a motivational problem, when in fact you have another mental game issue. If you constantly quit before going on tilt, perform poorly under pressure, or have no confidence in your game, lacking motivation is a symptom of those problems. Often your lack of motivation has been a problem for so long, it's easy to forget that tilt or fear was the original cause. By fixing the other mental game issues affecting motivation, most if not all of it will return. Many players don't have tilt, fear, or confidence problems, and instead are skilled procrastinators, lazy, and barely able to play when running bad. Players often don't think these problems can be eliminated, but they can be, especially laziness. Laziness is not a permanent part of your personality unless you want it to be. Some players are actually quite proud of how lazy they are. Aside from being lazy, here are other motivational problems addressed in this chapter. You play too much or too little when running good or bad. You procrastinate studying or working on your game. You play too much and get burned out. You don't feel like playing after a setback, such as a big loss against a tough opponent. Your dreams of playing rail heaven make you not want to grind lower stakes. You improve too quickly and your game falls apart once you lose momentum. The nature of motivation. It's obvious when you have motivation and when you lack it. But have you stopped to think about what motivation actually is? The answer is important because it helps to define the underlying causes of problems with motivation. Motivation is the emotion or energy behind achieving your goals. It's the fuel used to accomplish them. If you're lacking motivation, you either have problems with your goals or the energy needed to achieve them. Rarely do poker players say they have problems with their goals, yet every player with motivational problems has them. Here are a few examples of goal problems that will be explained in more detail later in the chapter. You're only after results and have no process-oriented goals. You have high expectations. You have no short-term goals, only far-off ones. You reach your goals and fail to set new ones. You have too many goals. You have many interests and can't choose what you want. You have underlying goals such as looking good, avoiding mistakes, or keeping up your win rate. Each of the specific motivational issues described in this chapter includes some problem with goals. These problems actually decrease the amount of energy, focus, or emotion behind your goals. In other words, these flaws are leaks that drain your motivation from the poker goals you really want to achieve. It's this lack of energy that forces you to use prop bets and movie quotes to fire you up. However, there are many other sources of motivation such as winning, financial needs such as family, paying for school, or living expenses, learning and improving as a player, proving people wrong, feeling challenged by the game, another player, or the pursuit, love for poker, dreams for the future. As you will see in this chapter, some sources of motivation are more stable and beneficial than others. Inspiration. Although many consider them to be one and the same, there's a significant difference between motivation and inspiration. Motivation is like a marathon runner, and inspiration is like a sprinter. Motivation and inspiration each play an essential part in achieving goals. Motivation is the more solid and stable energy that keeps you consistently working over the long term, while inspiration provides short, intense bursts of energy needed to get you fired up and to stay on track. There are many ups and downs when striving to achieve goals. Inspiration is the extra juice that pushes you through tougher times and helps you reach higher levels of play. Players are inspired in many different ways and by different things, some too spontaneous to conceptualize or predict. It may be a book, movie, song, seeing another player's success, or a reward that gets your blood pumping. Successfully finding ways to inspire you can sometimes be the difference between success and failure. While inspiration is invaluable, it can be used incorrectly. Here are two problems to look out for. 1. If you're constantly looking for new things to keep you inspired, you're relying on inspiration too much and likely compensating for underlying problems in your motivation. In other words, by playing clips of the movie Rocky or challenging yourself to play 100,000 hands a month, you might actually be protecting a problem that inspiration cannot fix. 2. You think a surge of inspiration makes problems such as tilt, anxiety, and a lack of confidence disappear. This is one reason why New Year's resolutions fail. People forget that it takes a long time to eliminate old habits or resolve underlying flaws. Being on an inspirational high can make these problems seem like a thing of the past. Ultimately, when you use inspiration and motivation more efficiently, you're in a stronger position to achieve your goals. Stable motivation. Finding the right mix of goals and sources of energy that drive you is key to attaining the motivational sweet spot, stable motivation. The sweet spot is a middle ground where you are driven by the right amount of energy. This allows you to efficiently work towards your goals, maintain a steady learning curve, and perform at a high level without experiencing major ups and downs or just downs. Stable motivation is different for each person since we're all unique. The easiest way to find this motivational middle ground is by resolving the underlying causes of your motivational problems, which may include other mental game issues. After you do that, what remains is stable motivation to achieve your goals. Barry's take.
Prop bets. Poker players often resort to making prop bets to spark their motivation. Browse any poker forum, and you are likely to see a bunch of threads where players are proposing prop bets that they can lose a certain amount of weight, play a certain number of hands, make Supernova Elite, top a tournament leaderboard, or make a certain amount of profit. The nature of these prop bets is essentially players trying to use money as a source of inspiration to do something they want to be able to do normally, but don't have the motivation to see it through. You might want to make Supernova Elite, but you don't think you can do it unless you have the money dangling in front of you. Of course, there are many prop bets with the opposite intention in mind, where you are gambling on a perceived edge. If you are already a sick grinder, then a number of hands bet might be a profitable proposition for you. But if you are using a prop bet to motivate you to do something you're not motivated to do, you are actually wagering a lot of money while being a big underdog. It's terrible game selection, and you are a prop bet fish. There seems to be a distinct shift between the more old-school gamblers, who would only bet on propositions they thought were sure things, and the online generation, who want to bet on outcomes they wish would happen. You only need to hear about Amarillo Slim's legendary exploits to know he only gambled on prospects where the sucker had no chance. In these motivational bets, you are the sucker, though it doesn't stop you from putting your money on the line. In the long term, no amount of money is going to resolve the underlying issues that are causing your motivational problems. Only by resolving these problems can you get the motivation you so desperately crave.
Common motivational problems. Laziness. Saying you're lazy is an easy way of excusing yourself from having to do something. I would have done X, but I didn't feel like it. What can I say? I'm lazy. It's as if laziness is an incurable disease or a character trait encoded in your DNA. If you believe deep down that laziness is permanent, it would be illogical for you to try anything to change it. However, laziness is not a permanent trait. It takes some work to break out of it, but this section can make that task easier. Laziness is a skill that, for better or worse, has been learned. You have learned the skill of doing something else. You have learned how to grind a large volume of television or sleep, rather than learning how to knuckle down and play longer sessions and work on your game. Instead of learning how to be productive, you've learned how to be lazy, and you're quite good at it. It's impossible to have no motivation. Think of being lazy as having a strong motivation to sleep for hours, watch TV, or mindlessly surf the internet. While that might seem like just a changing around of words, stating it that way is important in understanding and fixing the problem. Laziness can happen for many reasons. It may have developed early in your life if you weren't pushed to excel, or maybe it developed after college when completely on your own, or after making good money because you no longer felt like you had to make more. Here's an example to explain how laziness can develop and how to solve it. Often people become lazy when the structure they're used to having in their lives is gone. When living with parents, going to school, or working for someone else, you don't have to think much about what to do, you just have to do it. the value of having that structure provided for you often goes unrecognized until you're completely out on your own. Now you have to do both. Decide what to do and do it. That extra layer may not seem like much, but it makes life, or poker, a lot harder and often leads to laziness. When beginning to work on your laziness or any other motivational problem, try approaching poker like you're running a small business. You're in charge of when and where to play, how much to play, what stakes and games to play in, when and what to study, and who to get help from. It's your responsibility to analyze your poker and mental games, stay up to date with the latest software and strategy, and more. There's a lot to decide and to do. If you're lacking the skills to successfully run your business, you appear lazy. Here are a few simple ways to improve these skills. 1. Identify all the good things that you're doing, no matter how insignificant they seem. 2. Write out a list of what you need to be doing. 3. Prioritize the most important things you need to be doing. 4. Make a reasonable plan for how to start doing them. 5. Write down the excuses you previously made to avoid doing them. 6. Write down why each excuse is flawed or false. 7. Commit to executing your plan and avoiding excuses. Realizing there's something you can do about laziness means at least you have a chance of permanently staying out of the prison that laziness puts you in. Injecting logic. Doing what is less fun now means you can have more fun in the future. Work harder when it's hard, and eventually it'll become easy for real. Think of one thing you can do to be productive. Building momentum has to start somewhere. Procrastination. Constantly delaying and putting off what's important defines the skill of procrastinating. There's a lot you can be doing, such as reviewing hands, watching training videos, reading books, analyzing your game, posting on and reading forums, working with a coach, etc. It's easy to put work off when it seems like there's always tomorrow. Of course, for procrastinators, tomorrow is a leprechaun, a mystical entity that isn't real. When tomorrow becomes today, your work once again gets delayed until tomorrow. The longer it goes on, the more likely you are to delay working, especially since each day keeps adding more and more videos, hands, and forum posts to review. Tomorrow never comes in the way that you imagine. Only when you're under intense pressure from running bad, your win rate or profit drops, or you're preparing for a big tournament, will you start cramming in all the work that you've been avoiding. Unfortunately, without extreme intensity, working at a normal pace feels boring and like a major grind, so you end up depending on an intense pressure to learn, which often leads to burnout and perpetuates your patterns of procrastination. Other problems that result from working too intensely on your game include experiencing continual ups and downs in how well you're playing, getting overtaken by players who work more consistently, having a false impression of how much you can actually learn. It's impossible to learn skills to the level of unconscious competence that quickly. Feeling more confused because you now have more to think about when playing. If you want to stop procrastinating, you must first eliminate the belief there's always tomorrow. Today is when improvement happens, not just in your game, but also in reducing procrastination. Today is your only opportunity to improve. Tomorrow is a fantasy. That doesn't mean you have to do it all today. Developing consistency also means working at a steadier pace. Besides, when learning poker skills or knowledge to the level of unconscious competence, working for 15 minutes per day, rather than by cramming in 3 hours every other week, is the most efficient method. That's not true for everyone, of course, and it doesn't mean that you're restricted to working for 15 minutes at a time. However, if you're currently doing no work, then 15 minutes a day is a good start. Injecting logic. Today is the day to improve. Tomorrow is a fantasy. If you wait until tomorrow, you'll have twice the amount of work to do. Running good and bad. Variance does not cause motivational problems. It unearths them. Running good or bad provides an excellent way to identify the specific motivational or other mental game problems affecting your game. Thanks to variance, problems that may normally be small leaks accumulate into bigger problems. The pressure that variance puts on your game brings them to light and tells you what to be working on. When you're running bad, you might lack motivation because you feel destined to lose, equals injustice tilt. Working on your game seems like a waste of time, equals hopelessness. You question your ability, equals low confidence. You drop down in limits and have trouble playing enough hands, equals low confidence or fear of failure. You don't want to go on tilts, equals any type of tilt. A period of good variance can have a similar effect on your motivation because you've won enough and you don't need to play anymore, equals goal problems. It feels too easy, as if you're printing money, equals overconfidence. You want to book a win, equals risk aversion or hate losing tilt. You feel so good about your game, you don't need to work on it, equals overconfidence. You don't want to lose money back or have the feeling that losing brings, equals fear of failure. The previous are a handful of the problems running good or bad can expose. It's important to consistently be working to improve them, even when you're running normally and they're not being exposed by variance. The only way to know these issues are gone or how much progress you've made is by analyzing your mental game the next time you run well or run terribly. That's your test, so be prepared and consistently work on them until you pass. Burnout. Burnout is a unique motivational issue because it's actually caused by intense motivation. Even though players who regularly suffer from burnout often think they're lazy, the opposite is true. They are so motivated after playing and working themselves into the ground that when their mind is extremely fatigued and needs rest, they criticize themselves for not wanting to play, being easily distracted, being bored, or feeling tired. They're not lazy. They need rest. Here are two things to keep in mind about burnout. One, it's possible to mistake burnout for another motivational problem, since the symptoms are similar. Two, burnout also makes you more susceptible to other mental game problems such as tilt. Underestimating stress. Generally, players significantly underestimate the amount of stress and pressure they are under when playing poker. Career, family, achievement, and respect all add more pressure to every decision, and thus require the player to have more energy to consistently play at a high level. Players who underestimate the stress in poker are often the ones who are most critical of themselves. They often end up thinking that they're being lazy, when in reality, constant high levels of stress have caused them to burn out. Burnout isn't an excuse. It's a real cause of motivational problems. Highly motivated people burn out when they go through a long period of intense motivation without getting proper rest. The concept of burnout in mental terms is roughly the same as it is with physical training. When runners train too hard, their performance suffers because overworked muscles become fatigued. Similarly, when poker players play too much and for far too long, their performance suffers because their mental muscle is exhausted. Here are a few ideas on how to break this cycle. During times when you're intensely motivated, ease off the throttle just a bit. When emotion, even motivation, is too high, it can cause you to play suboptimally and to slow down the learning process. Recognize the early signs of your pattern of burnout and take steps to get proper rest, such as sleep and exercise, to prevent the problem from getting worse. Take at least one day off per week and 5 days off per month. On your days off, think about and do other things than poker. Have a hobby other than poker that you enjoy doing and don't take too seriously. For online players, make sure to take some time away from all electronics each day. Evaluate your game at the end of each day that you play. This helps you mentally put poker down and allows your brain to relax. Goal problems. Goals are essential to motivation because they define its direction. This topic often covers entire chapters in other books. But to keep things simple, here are descriptions of the most common goal problems listed earlier in this chapter. Results-oriented goals only. When results are poor and they are the only way you define your skill or progress in the game, losing motivation makes sense. Since you're guaranteed to go through periods of poor results, it's important to learn how to maintain motivation throughout these periods. To do that, add process-oriented goals such as improving tilt control, reducing the number of mistakes, improving decision-making, or increasing quality hours played. Then, when results are poor, if you're also making progress in other areas, you'll remain motivated. You're not eliminating results goals. Money, winning, Supernova Elite, and other results goals matter. You're diversifying your goals in poker, just like you diversify an investment portfolio. Adding process-oriented goals is especially important in poker because you have control of your ability to achieve these goals in the short run. High expectations. Often players have expectations that are so high, they're nearly impossible to achieve. For example, it's common for players to expect to easily play 40 hours more per month than usual, win a large amount of money, or move up in stakes quickly. These goals seem easy in their mind, but they're ignoring reasons why in reality they'll be tough to achieve. When they often fall short of reaching these high expectations, players get stuck in the disappointment of failure, and they lose motivation. They're dejected about failing, even though they were wrong to believe they could achieve such things in the first place. Really, they ought to be setting goals. When they have goals, they strive to figure out how to achieve them. Then, when they fall short of a goal, they readjust their strategy and keep moving forward. Unless you have solid proof of what you can expect to accomplish, turn every expectation into a goal, and then figure out how to achieve it. Faraway goals. When you have a big dream or long-term goal without any smaller targets, It can be easy to lose motivation when things go poorly. These setbacks, such as a downswing, can make you feel as if your dream or goal is farther away and can cause you to lose hope. Instead, break your long-term goal into more manageable chunks. This way it's easier to recover from a setback and continue moving forward. Having smaller or short-term goals is important so you can see progress along the way. These small victories are essential in keeping you motivated for the long haul. Reach a milestone, now what? If you win a tournament, have your biggest month ever, move up in stakes, go pro, or make Supernova or Supernova Elite without setting your next goal, you can be lacking motivation simply because you no longer have something to play for. Indecision. There are a lot of possible goals to strive for, both within poker and outside of it. When you don't know what you want, you end up doing a lot of random things that make it seem as if you're unmotivated. Really, you're undecided. Rather than getting down that you aren't accomplishing anything, see this period for what it is, an exploration. When there are a lot of options, you're essentially standing at the base of several mountains trying to decide which one to climb. You're in the process of gathering information, eventually needing to make a decision about what you want. To make the process go faster, regularly write down your options, evaluate them, and get feedback from other players. Underlying goals. Sometimes players are motivated to avoid embarrassment, mistakes, criticism, losing money, or having their win rate drop. It's rare for players to think of these as goals, but when viewed that way, their behavior, such as avoiding playing, makes a lot more sense. These underlying goals are a problem because you spend energy on them, rather than on the goals in poker that you really want to achieve. After identifying these goals in your game, resolve the reason you want to achieve them, and you'll have more motivation for the goals that are really important. Personal goals. If you need to play poker, but aren't motivated by anything within poker, consider how poker fits into your life. Then set personal goals that poker can help you to accomplish. The motivation to get hands in comes back when poker has greater importance in your life. Client story. Matt, Mbolt 1, Bolt. 3-6 to 5100, no limit hold'em. Drag the bar, coach.
Working with Jared really helped me get to Supernova Elite in 2010. It was never a question of whether I would do it. It was a question of how well I could play, having to grind a ton of hands while I was running bad. PokerStars doesn't care if I win or lose. I don't get any more VPPs for playing well. Obviously, I wanted to win money in the process, but results-based goals are terrible. Goals like winning a certain amount of money are stupid. I just had to play well. Motivation was definitely an issue early on, but became way less of one as I got used to the idea of grinding no matter what cards came out. There were several 100,000 hand stretches where I played my best.